looking for that perfect Christmas gift for the family? Why not a chicken? Stick a bow on top, put the chicken under the tree, and who knows, you may even have a couple eggs to fry up for breakfast Christmas morning. Give the gift that keeps on clucking. A chicken. Okay, maybe it's not the perfect gift for your family, but it is the perfect gift for a poor family in Asia. A chicken can break the cycle of poverty for a poor family. Yes, a chicken. A chicken's eggs provide food and nourishment for a family, and they can sell those eggs at the market for income. When you donate a chicken or any other animal through Gospel for Asia, 100% of what you give goes to the field. And the best gift of all, when Gospel for Asia gives a poor family an animal, it opens the door to the love of Jesus. So give the perfect gift for a family in Asia this Christmas. Give them a chicken. Call 866-WIN-ASIA. Or to see chickens and other animals to donate, go to CritterCampaign.org.
Hi, this is Jeff Foxworthy. 65 million Americans serve as a caregiver for a sick or disabled loved one. If you're one of them, then listen to my friend Peter Rosenberger's show. He's got redneck tendencies, but he's really good at what he does.
Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver. This is our podcast, and we are thrilled to have you along with us as we delve into all things caregiver. We speak fluent caregiver here on the show. You would think by now I would have learned it. I've been my 35th year. I am Peter Rosenberger, bringing you a lifetime of experience to offer a lifeline of help to those who are pushing the wheelchair, staying up late with loved ones, back and forth to medical visits, name it, laundry. You know, I've often found that laundry is probably one of the biggest tasks we do as caregiving. But through all of that, how's your heart space? How's your head space? What's the soul of a caregiver? What's going on with that? And that's what we talk about on this show, because if your heart is in a squirrely place, guess what? It doesn't matter how good you do the laundry. It doesn't matter these other things. And so our goal here on this show is to offer insights and things that will help strengthen you from the inside out. And that way we then our wallets have a fighting chance. Our bodies have a fighting chance. Our jobs, our relationships, everything else has a fighting chance if our heart space is in a good place. And so we'd love to have you join with us if you're watching along on social media. We do stream the podcast live on social media through our Facebook page, Hope for the Caregiver, and our Facebook group, Hope for the Caregiver. You're welcome to join that. And also through our page of Standing with Hope, which is the presenting sponsor of the show, the overall arching ministry that supports what we do. And you can follow along on those live, and then certainly the podcast. If you're listening by now on the podcast, you know how to get in touch with the podcast. It's a free podcast, and I hope you'll share it with others. We are, I think, encroaching upon our 500th episode, I think. We're getting pretty close to it, if not already there. And we have a pretty exhaustive library of topics and things we've just delved into. And hope you'll take advantage of it. And when I say we, I don't mean myself in the plural. I mean himself, the Baron of the Board, the Sultan of Sound, the Earl of Engineering, the man who is lovely to behold. He is John Butler, the Count of Mighty Disco, everyone.
How you doing, Peter? Oh, thank you so much for the intro. It is
lovely to behold.
Lovely to behold. Well, better than like great and terrible as the dawn.
the great and terrible John. We've got a lot to cover. I'm doing okay. I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Okay, sure.
First off, how was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was fantastic. I roasted a duck. I baked several cheesecakes. And I woke up Friday morning and just cut off a slice of fresh baked bread and dipped it in duck fat. And that was my breakfast. And it was fantastic. I know we talk about the food a lot initially, like, oh, that's what, you know, but I did a lot of cooking, but I got to do a lot of cooking with the kids. And that was a real treat. It was a ton of fun.
Do they enjoy that?
They do up to a point, obviously.
did you get to do a lot of cleaning with the kids? Did they enjoy that part of it?
They did not enjoy that part. However, they are on dishwasher duty. So
I grew up in a large family, and we all had assignments. We had chores.
Sure,
and
sure.
My dad used to say, look, your mother is not your maid. And yeah, dad was also captain in the Navy. And so when he asked for a bed to be made, he literally wanted to see a quarter bounce off of it.
Yeah, that, and there was he meant something very specific when he said, "I want this bed made."
Yeah, and he showed us how to do it. We knew how to do it, and then but we each had a night for kitchen duty.
Do you still do hospital corners when you make your bed in the morning?
Sometimes. Sometimes I cut corners.
Yeah, that's but, what I'm talking about, yeah.
But I am, my night to do the kitchen was always Wednesday night.
Okay.
And I have four brothers. And so we each had, and then a sister, baby sister, but we each pulled a night. And that way mom was not stuck with a kitchen full of dirty dishes. You know, that was our life. But we had a quiet Thanksgiving. We were going to go down to South Carolina, but we did not. I just had not healed up enough from my surgery that I felt like going across the country sitting in a plane. So we pushed that back until after the holidays, and then we'll have a little bit more time to be with them when it's not so crazy. Because I do have a large family, and only about a third of them got together. I won't tell you what state they're in because the governor may – no, I'm just kidding. It's a large family. And so it's a little, mom and dad are getting a little elderly. So it's a little overwhelming when we all come in.
Right.
And so we'll have some quality time, and then that'll give me a chance to heal up, when I go at Christmas to see our new granddaughter. I have not seen this young lady yet.
I was going to ask if you had physically been in the presence yet.
Yeah. I have
that's,
not.
Well, so, that's unfortunate, but probably a good call.
It's the sign of the times, but I will be coming soon, and so I want to be up for her. I wanted to share something before we get into what we're going to talk about today. And by the way, you got a big shout out already on Facebook from Marianne.
Marianne, it is a delight to hear from you. Thank you so much. And it is my pleasure.
I wanted to share something that had happened many years ago. When I wrote Gracie's book, I helped her put her autobiography together. It's called Gracie Standing with Hope. And by the way, if I'm not looking directly at you, John, I'm looking over. I got two cameras here and things like that. You know the deal. But
I know the drill.
when I was helping her put together her book, I married Gracie after her accident. I didn't know her when she had her accident, and it wasn't until several years later that I met her. But when they were at the hospital, I did a lot of research to help her put all this together, and then I helped actually pin it. It's as told to me. The publisher said, nobody's going to know her story better than you, so you help, you write it. And I was like, did you see my grades in English class? You know, we got editors. Sucker came back with so much red ink on it the first draft, I thought I'd been stabbed. But it's, but there was as I talked with the family about, you know, the events that happened, because Gracie was hurt on November 18th. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, right here at the holidays. So she was unconscious for 3 weeks. Head smacked that steering wheel pretty hard, and she was unconscious for 3 weeks and hovering between life and death. They did not know if she was going to live or not. And they were having Thanksgiving, her family, it's her sister and her mother and father and her aunt and her grandmother all came up. They were there. And they had Thanksgiving in the hospital cafeteria, one floor below intensive care where Gracie was. And I know this hospital very well because we had 50 plus surgeries at that hospital we went through together. So I know this cafeteria. And so they're down there and the family is trying their hardest to have some kind of meaningful Thanksgiving experience. And Gracie's grandmother, who's gone on, she's passed away many years ago. She pulled out one of those old paper turkeys that fold out, you know, that have the things.
Yeah.
And she put it on the table. And she inserted a spot of normalcy into an extremely abnormal situation. And I've always thought, and we included that in the story, and I always thought that was an important moment that, you know, and I think it only comes from people who have the kind of perspective that maybe, you know, somebody who's lived the kind of life she's had. She was, you know, she was elderly at the time, but she had gone through the Depression and World War, and she'd lost a son who was in the military. She you know, all the things, and she'd lost her husband. So she'd had a lot of life experiences. And
not a lot was going to surprise this lady.
No, and she also understood the importance of normalcy in abnormal situations. And I thought, boy, that's a great lesson for us as caregivers, that it's okay, even in the midst of craziness. Sometimes it's just going to be a fold-out paper turkey that you get, you know, at the dollar store or whatever it is. I don't know where she got it, but I always admired her for trying to help orient the family to say, look, we're going to get through this. Yeah. And we do have something to be thankful for. And Gracie, of course, lived and has gone on to achieve great things, even though she bears in her body the scars and the consequences of what happened to her and still has to deal with it. But for me, that was an important symbol. That was an important symbol. And so, I had Thanksgiving dinner here with her parents. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we talked a little bit about that journey. And yeah. as we give thanks, you know, I try to imagine how painful that was for her family to have to be sleeping on the floor in a critical care waiting room over Thanksgiving. But by the time they kind of started catching their breath a little bit, and that's when her grandmother came up, and then all of a sudden they found a room to stay in and that kind of stuff. And because they were from Florida and Gracie was in Tennessee. And so it was just one of those things that Thanksgiving can be very, very, very difficult for families with special needs and disabilities and so forth. And we want to be up for the holidays and have just great time and all that, but it's also a time of deep reflection for a lot of people, that there are a lot of Thanksgivings that have not been so festive. Gracie and I've had Thanksgiving dinner while she's been in the hospital bed. And the church brought a meal to us there, so we had a nice Thanksgiving meal, but we were in the hospital, and so.
Well, and Thanksgiving's kind of like that. It does call us to, you know, think about for what we're thankful and everything like that. But that can really be, you know, that can be this just, you know, all positive thing, like, oh, I've got a ton to be thankful for. But it also, you know, the light of that can cast a shadow and make you think about, oh, I really need to be thankful for things because of all this other stuff. You know, it can be this bittersweet deal.
It is. It's a bittersweet time for a lot of people. I respect that. One of the things I do on the call-in show on Saturday mornings, mm-hmm. when I have so many callers, John doesn't get up early with me on that on Saturday mornings. It's in his contract that he will not do a live on-air broadcast before crack of noon.
Saturday is my one day to sleep in. The kids know it, right? So, well, I get up real early with them all the other times.
But I asked people to give something that they're thankful for, and I had to drill down with this, because the first couple of callers, oh, I'm thankful for God and his son, Jesus Christ. And I was like, listen, I get that. We all are.
We get it. We all.
I get it.
We're already on the same page.
But I want you to drill down and get something very specific that you're thankful for. And I think the more specific you get, I think the more connection you have to it, the more. What's the word I'm looking for?
Well, it's the more pertinent, you know, or. You know, it's more crystalline in your mind. If you really have, you can think about, it's like, oh, I'm thankful for the love of my family. Well, that's, you know, it's not specific enough. If you want to say, I am really thankful for the love of my only child or something like that, or
tell you one for me is that I know this to be a heartbreak for a lot of guys, because I've talked to them, but I am very, very thankful that I never have to spend a minute looking over my shoulder, wondering if my father loves and approves of me.
Not one minute.
I have no doubt that my dad truly loves me and approves of me. Not always approve of everything I do, but he approves of me as does my mother. You know, I this is a little bit personal, but every time I'm with them, I leave them, and I talk to them throughout the week, almost every day. But when I'm with them personally, I look at them, because they're elderly, and I say, look, nothing needs to be said and nothing needs to be unsaid. You know, that's just something and I'm very thankful that I have that kind of relationship, because the older I get, the more I realize how few people have that. It's something to be treasured, and I do treasure it.
This is something that it's. I'm sorry, this is kind of going off on a little bit of a sidetrack, but
it's us, John.
But that sort of attitude, that feeling that you have, that you don't ever have to worry about, you know, does my dad love and cherish me? it just makes me think about, I've been thinking about this a lot this week, and there are people who really don't have that about themselves. They don't have the confidence in their own ability. They don't love themselves in a way that allows them to be confident in certain situations, or allows them to be, you know, socially adept as they might want, because they're uncomfortable with that or whatever.
I hear you. I have one last thing to offer, and I'm going to be very bold on this one, John.
Okay.
I am thankful that your two children will never have to look over their shoulder and wonder if their dad loves and approves of them, because I know that you do.
Thank you.
And I'm thankful for the model that you are to those kids. This is Hope for the Caregiver. Sorry we get a little bit emotional there, but hey, you know what? Being a caregiver is emotional. This is Peter Rosenberger. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Have you ever struggled to trust God when lousy things happen to you? I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and in 1983, I experienced a horrific car accident leading to 80 surgeries and both legs amputated. I questioned why God allowed something so brutal to happen to me. But over time, my questions changed, and I discovered courage to trust God. That understanding, along with an appreciation for quality prosthetic limbs, led me to establish Standing with Hope. For more than a dozen years, we've been working with the government of Ghana and West Africa, equipping and training local workers to build and maintain quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. On a regular basis, we purchase and ship equipment and supplies, and with the help of inmates in a Tennessee prison, we also recycle parts from donated limbs. All of this is to point others to Christ, the source of my hope and strength. Please visit standingwithhope.com to learn more and participate in lifting others up. That's standingwithhope.com. I'm Gracie, and I am Standing with Hope. I'm alive, lift up my voice above the chaos and the noise. It's all my hope amidst the pain. I shout this song against the rain.
Rejoice evermore. Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. I am Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a family caregiver to help you stay stronger and healthier, and dare I say it, even a little more joyful as we deal with often very difficult circumstances, but we don't have to collapse under the strain. Bad storms make for good sailors. And that's kind of our whole theme here. We're not asking that necessarily that storms be all taken away, because we know that they won't be. And some storms are going to last a lifetime, but may we be stronger in it. And so we're glad to have you with us. Go ahead, John.
We hit on that last week, actually, you know, just that I don't want the road to be easy. I just want to be strong enough for whatever road there is, you know?
Yeah. And it speaks for itself. There's a Latin phrase that lawyers use, and I can't remember what it is. You should know that.
Qui bono? That's to whose benefit, I'm sorry.
Johnny Fravitz, I don't know, something. But anyway, so that's, I don't know how your Thanksgiving went. For those who listen to the show regularly, you know our sensitivity to how difficult holidays can be for caregivers. And those of you who are longtime listeners know that my favorite holiday, of course, is Arbor Day.
Because there's my favorite holiday?
No muss, no fuss. What's that?
Oh, you know, April Fool's Day.
But on Arbor Day, there's no muss, there's no fuss, no parade, no drama. Nothing. You just plant a tree, water it, and say a prayer and walk away. Nobody gets hurt. but I recognize how difficult that it is for caregivers for holiday times, because you have this unwieldy burden of making it special, and also with that sense of dread that, oh my goodness, this may be the last one kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's a hard way to live. And so we want to do things on this show that are going to speak to that in a way that you are strengthened and encouraged by this. You know, you don't have to have it perfect. You know, we all want the Currier knives or the Norman Rockwell You remember his painting for Thanksgiving, Norman?
Yeah, okay. There is no way that there is no way that that little old lady can hold up that bird the way that she's holding it. All right. You see her? She's leaning over the table, and this bird is bigger than her. She just hold it like it's
there's
nothing.
A block and tackle. Well, you know, and no,
it's
I think
a beautiful
we
painting, by the way, you know,
it is, and we paint ourselves though into these terrible corners of that are hard to shake because we've got to make it like it was.
Yeah,
no,
it is the unrealistic standards that we think are standards when in fact they aren't. They're, you know, that we made them up, and it's not society that made them up. It's not, you know, your neighbor that made it up. At the end of the day, it's you that made them up, and you can just change those standards.
And you're the one that's shackled to it.
Yeah. You're the one that's married to this, you know,
for example, everybody's having turkey. You had duck.
Oh yeah. Last year I had beef Wellington.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that old, with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, you know, duck season, rabbit season, duck season.
Yeah. You can really enjoy the traditional things and want to do that and do everything. But the things that are really important to me, and I can't say what's important to everybody else, but I would humbly submit that the things that are really important is not whether you get the whole bean or the whole berry or just the jelly cranberry stuff in the can. I would submit that it is not, you know, did mama make the stuffing this year that I really like. I would submit that it is, there's some really much more important things, like maybe it's just calling grandma. You know,
well said.
Yeah. And those things are fun. Don't get me wrong. You can hyperbolically complain about things, but
it is sometimes you have to have Thanksgiving in a hospital room.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to wave through a window because you can't get in to see them. And sometimes it's a paper turkey in the hospital cafeteria. And yeah. It is what it is. As we shift gears, the next segment, when we come back from the break at the bottom of the hour, we're going to go into some stuff getting ready for Christmas, because that's another one that becomes very difficult. But last week, we read a poem from one of our listeners who sent it, and I referenced this poem. It may be my favorite poem of all time. Maybe. It's a simple poem, but for some reason it spoke to me. I'm no connoisseur of the arts by any stretch of the imagination, but this spoke to me.
Don't you have a composition degree? Is that?
Well, I do, but I do have a composition, but it's a music composition. And I wanted to read this.
Know, right.
Well, yes, true.
Sorry.
But I'm not like, some people are just like, what do you call the guy that knows how all the great wines, sommelier?
Oh, a sommelier, yeah. Or you a bard, you aren't, you know, is that?
Yeah, a bard I ain't.
All right.
He ain't no bard, he ain't. But this one I love, and I think this speaks to me as a caregiver, because I think about all the things that churning that I must do. And that poem last week we read from the listener was, and that's not on our podcast if you want to go hear it. Please take advantage of it. It's a beautiful poem she did. But it reminded me of this one, and this is mine. This is when I have those moments, and it's by Robert Frost, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. And I live in Montana. I live out here next to the forest, and we have snow. I mean, I live in Narnia, and this is 6 months out of the year. But it's, I want to read it to you before we go to the break. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. These woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. As a caregiver, that chokes me up every time, because there are places that are so pristinely beautiful or peaceful, whether it's in the moment just closing your eyes or whether it's physically going outside when I see the horses. I look through the window here and I see the horses out here in the snow. But I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. And I think that's the tension for us as caregivers, is that we find these places of beauty, but the tension is that we know we have a lot to do.
Yeah.
And how do we resolve that tension in a way that doesn't compromise our abilities to be healthier people and to appreciate the beauty? And we're going to talk a little bit about that more in the next segment, and I have miles to go before I sleep. This is Peter Rosenberg. There's Hope for the Caregiver. We're here with John Butler, and we are so glad that you're with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Peter Rosenberger. Have you ever helped somebody walk for the first time? I've had that privilege many times through our organization, Standing with Hope. When my wife, Gracie, gave up both of her legs following this horrible wreck that she had as a teenager, and she tried to save them for years, and it just wouldn't work out, and finally she relinquished them and thought, wow, this is it. I mean, I don't have any legs anymore. What can God do with that? And then she had this vision for using prosthetic limbs as a means of sharing the gospel, to put legs on our fellow amputees, and that's what we've been doing now since 2005 with Standing with Hope. We work in the West African country of Ghana, and you can be a part of that through supplies, through supporting team members, through supporting the work that we're doing over there. You could designate a limb. There's all kinds of ways that you could be a part of giving the gift that keeps on walking at standingwithhope.com. Would you take a moment to go out to standingwithhope.com and see how you can give? They go walking and leaping and praising God. You can be a part of that at standingwithhope.com.
As a caregiver, think about all the legal documents you need. Power of attorney, a will, living wills, and so many more. Then think about such things as disputes about medical bills. What if, instead of shelling out hefty fees for a few days of legal help, you paid a monthly membership and got a law firm for life? Well, we're taking legal representation and making some revisions in the form of accessible, affordable, full-service coverage. Finally, you can live life knowing you have a lawyer in your back pocket who, at the same time, isn't emptying it. It's called Legal Shield, and it's practical, affordable, and a must for the family caregiver. Visit caregiverlegal.com. That's caregiverlegal.com. Isn't it about time someone started advocating for you? www.caregiverlegal.com, an independent associate.
He'll give you hope for tomorrow, joy for your sorrow, strength for everything you go through. Remember, he knows the plans he has for you.
I love that. Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. That's Gracie from her CD, Resilient. You know what? If you want it for a Christmas gift, it's a great Christmas gift. You could go out and be a part of what we're doing at hopeforthecaregiver.com. You see where it says donate for any amount. We'll send you a copy of that CD, and you can send it on to put it in the stocking for someone or whatever. It's a great CD that she has done of songs that will just lift you up, touch your heart. She ends up with a beautiful rendition of an old hymn called Breathe on Me, Breath of God. And she does it a cappella. And the reason she did, she didn't know that hymn. But my mother was in intensive care with congestive heart failure, and she couldn't breathe.
Okay.
I mean, she had a tube, she had a ventilator tube, and she was in pretty bad shape. And she pointed out she wanted Gracie to sing that to her. Well, Gracie didn't know it. I got the hymnal for it. And I listened to Gracie. I helped her learn it, and then, but I listened to her as I was coming down the hallway. She was in the intensive care room. I could hear her voice echoing all the way down throughout the corridor, and nurses were stopping to listen Yeah. And Gracie was singing, "Breathe on me, breath of God." I mean, it was like, and I thought, okay, we're putting that on the record. And when Chris Latham and I did that, we were just bawling in the control room while she was singing it.
Okay, so real quick aside question, because I do have a poem, by the way.
I like your poem. I like your ear for poetry, the way you do. Well, I mean, that's kind of crazy. Here we are talking about two grown men talking about poetry on a show.
No,
what's your
I've
podcast about? Two grown men.
Yeah.
I've written limericks.
No, but I've written poetry my entire life because there is no greater creative force than a young man trying to get a young lady.
well said. So,
but beside the point. But I do have a quick question for you though before I give you a poem.
Speak it to me, my bearded friend.
Yeah. What is? Do you have a review of hospitals based on the acoustics? Like, is the ICU like which hospital has the best acoustics? Yeah,
I got to tell you that at Greenville Memorial Hospital in Greenville, South Carolina, when I heard Gracie singing that, the acoustics were so good in there because we were in the ICU, so there wasn't a lot of carpet.
Right.
Now most hospital rooms don't have carpet, but a lot of the hallways will have carpet,
and so.
I remember at St. Thomas they put in carpet, so it didn't do it. The rooms itself were kind of noisy, but the hallways were a little bit quieter. Or they had that kind of that flooring that was kind of sound absorbent. It was not carpet, it was almost like it kind of gave a little bit. Vanderbilt, there's no acoustics will help Vanderbilt in Nashville. It is a cacophony of sounds at Vanderbilt. I mean, it's just noise nonstop. Summit, I don't remember a whole lot about their acoustics. Henderson Memorial, it's okay. Yeah. Out here at this little hospital here in Ennis, it's okay. There's a lot of carpet in the hallways.
My point is that you know about the acoustics. Like you have paid attention.
Well, I do. I just gave you a list of six hospitals.
Exactly.
But the one in Greenville with my mother was the best.
Oh, lovely. All right. So one of my favorite poems is from Arthur O'Shaughnessy. And it's just Ode.
Oh, a Greek fellow,
yeah.
huh?
Yeah. Wait, no. No, but you'll know the opening. So we are the music makers and we are the dreamers of the dreams.
Willy Wonka.
Yeah. Standing by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams. World losers and world forsakers on whom the pale moon gleams. But we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems. With wonderful deathless ditties, we build up the world's great cities. And out of a fabulous story, we fashion an empire's glory. One man at pleasure shall go forth and conquer a crown. And three with a new song's measure can trample an empire down. We in the ages lying in the buried past of the earth built Nineveh with our sighing and Babel itself with our mirth. And or through them with prophesizing to the old of the new world's worth. For each age is a dream that is dying or one that is coming to birth. And that's it.
You know, I could do a whole CD of John reading poetry. I just realized there's a real market for this.
There should be. Yeah.
You know, why does that speak to you?
Well, a little bit because of Thanksgiving. Each age is a dream that is dying or one that is coming to birth. It's especially in this year. We've got a really weird set of circumstances going on, and we always feel like we're on the brink of something terrible. But that's every day. That's we as humans, you know, we built this wonderful
city
on rock and roll. Right, it sounds like we built Nineveh with our sighing and Babel itself with our mirth, and then we overthrew them because we found something that worked better. And that's, you know, that kind of that it's just a little bit about, I think he wrote that about I can't remember what it was. It was some terrible war, you know. But just like, hey, yeah, things are weird. Things are strange. But changes the only
Gracie
constant.
Said something the other day that a lot of people have been posting on social media. She said, you know, when they were saying, gosh, I can't wait for 2020 to be over. I'm going to go out on New Year's Eve and give the finger to 2020, you know, all this kind of
right,
stuff.
And
she said, never wish anything away because there are countless others who would give one more day, even in 2020.
Exactly. And that's a little, that's pertinent. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, I look at the people that we've lost this year, not just through the coronavirus, but other things. And I look at the things that were lost, that people lost the ability to do and so forth. And so it was just, it was a splash of cold water on me from Gracie to say, hey, really think through this. Don't wish anything away because we all know people who would give all they have for one more day with the cherished loved one, that kind of thing. Yeah. And so, you know, and I think that,
well, and if anybody can say it, it's Gracie. You know?
I think so. And I think that we sometimes, I'm doing a, I don't know if you knew this or not, but I'm doing a column every week in the local community paper out here.
Oh, nice.
And it's called Caregiver Corner. It's kind of like Dear Abby's, Dear Peter.
Sure.
And I'm hoping to syndicate it, you know, just like I've done with the radio show, but do it with this. I was told that I have a face for radio and a voice for print. But one of the questions that I got was, Dear Peter, would you do it again? And this is the answer I wrote back. As caregivers, we struggle enough with reality, so living in the hypothetical is never recommended. And then I went in to explain my thoughts on this because I don't like to live in the hypothetical. I think we can live, let's don't live in the would, could, should, or if only. Sometimes we romanticize or regret the past, or we fantasize and or afraid of the future. In either way, we're not living in the present. And that's the hardest thing for us as caregivers. And for you to take that poem and just pound it in and say, okay, here's the breadth of this. And you say, here's our moment in time to wrap our arms around this. And I love that. So what do you think? I'd like to hear feedback from everybody. Should we do a full record of John doing poetry?
Oh, I think, I'm 100% on board with that. Yeah.
So we ought to do that. Go ahead.
No, I do. Well, I do a weird like kind of Facebook Live broadcast for my friends sort of deal without getting too far into it. But one of the rewards for watching long enough is I'll do a cold read, throw your favorite poem at me and I'll read it right off the bat. Just happy to do it.
I love it.
Cause it really, in the same way that you ask somebody, do you have a favorite song? Do you, what's something that really speaks to you or what's something that you would, you know, asking somebody what their favorite poem is or even like how they take their hash browns at Waffle House, but something personal.
Well, I've changed it now that I've come out west here in Montana. It's scattered,
are there Waffle Houses?
Chunked and branded. No, branded. There's not any Waffle House. Okay. I have to make my own.
Oh, no.
I joned so bad for a Waffle House. You have no idea, man.
Oh, man.
We're going to pivot just a hair because I want to
get
at least two of these in as we head up to Christmas.
Yeah.
I want to get two of these things that caregivers, what can we do for ourselves as caregivers for Christmas? Or what can you do for a loved one, but more importantly, that's a caregiver, but more importantly for yourself, what can you do? So John, pick two and let's talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got, 7 or 8 of these that are your general deals that I love all of them. One thing that really leaps out at me is it sounds like the most mundane one or the one that is, why would you lead with this one? But I feel like it might be the most important, and it's do something physical. It's not
do something physical.
Yeah. It's, it's getting out and especially now, like, cause that can, it touches on a lot of the other things that you talk about, but, even just like you said, walking to the back of the house and back, you know, I find that with the kids and I, they're doing distance learning right now. We're cooped up an awful lot, and I have to really make the decision to go out and say, hey, let's go ride the bikes around the block, or let's walk down to the field and throw the frisbee or the
You're
the,
in charge of recess.
I'm in charge of recess, absolutely. So I have to be on that. Otherwise, they don't get out and do anything. And it's really, really important, especially in the waning, breaths of summer and fall. it touches on a lot of the other things, like, you know, writing a card for yourself or for, you know, getting out to break that isolation. Even though we're stuck in this weird quasi quarantine situation, getting out and even just waving at people on the road. I'm coming at this from a gentleman who lives in the southern United States of America. So, like, we wave at people.
Well, we wave at animals out here where we are.
Humans will pack bond with anything. You put two googly eyes on a Roomba, I'm making that my friend and giving it a name, all right?
Needs more googly eyes. I get that. I've been doing physical therapy with my knee, and I've listened to my physical therapist talk about the importance of what needs to happen, you know, and I can see the difference in my left leg and my right leg because I lost some muscle mass in my left leg. Mm-hmm. And I've got to work on strengthening that up. And she said, that'll come with walking, but you gotta punch it 30 minutes of something, you know, and that's important. And so we caregivers tend to be, it's real easy to become sedentary.
And it's real easy because you've been putting out fires all day, you know? Go ahead.
No, what? Go ahead.
I was saying you're putting out fires all day. It's easy to neglect those habits of like getting up and going to the gym if that's your thing. Or you go, my mother used to go for a swim every morning. That was her thing. And that was her way of kind of getting a little bit of mindfulness or meditation or something, where it was a habit that she was in. But then she was putting out fires because she was raising, you know, my brother and I by herself, two boys, and we didn't make it very easy.
Well, so, I didn't realize how much I missed this when I was dealing with my leg, and because I would on the horse, I would be out on the property, you know, doing something, and I'm starting to get back in the swing of it now and pushing myself to walk and to try to walk better. But you're right. That's a great gift that we can give to ourselves through the holidays, because when also it's darker, there's more darkness. It tends to dampen our hearts and our souls a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important for us to get outside, move ourselves around just to get those endorphins going, because what happens is everything just starts piling on us and emotionally and physically, and we start getting further down, and then we put on the holiday 15 pounds, that kind of thing or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And it just kind of works against us, and we have to understand it's working against us. And the only way we can push back, not the only way, but one of the best ways we can push back as a caregiver to give ourselves a Christmas gift is to do something physical. That's a good one. Do we got time before we go to the break? Let's do one more, John.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, so this one is actually my favorite, but we're
going to lead all the way up to Christmas time. But these are gifts that you could give yourself as a caregiver.
Yeah, yeah, and this one's actually my favorite. But I wanted to lead with kind of the preaching one. You know, like, hey, go get up, go get off the couch, let's go. But the other one I really like and I feel is very important is to do something that brings you joy. It can have some activity. It doesn't necessarily need to be physical. I like to do calligraphy. That's not really a high heart rate sport or anything like that.
Actually, I'm going to brag on John a little bit. He not only does calligraphy, but he's been doing music scoring. I've been watching that, and he writes these things.
I did.
And I took that in music school, and you are quite good at that, young man.
Well, thank you. That little post actually got me about four or five commissions, which with employment being a little bit fuzzy these days, that was really nice. So I got commissions for people for Christmas gifts. Yeah.
Well, some of my posts have got me four or five commitments.
Oh, yeah, fair point. Well, we can hit that joy thing here after the break, but we hear the music, so we're coming up on it. So.
We are going to go to break. These are great Christmas gifts that we can give to ourselves as a caregiver. And what are some things that you could do for yourself? Doesn't have to cost a lot of money, but we're going to talk about this, and every week we'll add some more to it. So by the time Christmas gets here, you're not floundering a little bit. You've been embracing who you are and caring for who you are. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. We'll be right back.
Have you ever struggled to trust God when lousy things happen to you? I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and in 1983, I experienced a horrific car accident leading to 80 surgeries and both legs amputated. I questioned why God allowed something so brutal to happen to me, but over time, my questions changed, and I discovered courage to trust God. That understanding, along with an appreciation for quality prosthetic limbs, led me to establish Standing with Hope. For more than a dozen years, we've been working with the government of Ghana and West Africa, equipping and training local workers to build and maintain quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. On a regular basis, we purchase and ship equipment and supplies. And with the help of inmates in a Tennessee prison, we also recycle parts from donated limbs. All of this is to point others to Christ, the source of my hope and strength. Please visit standingwithhope.com to learn more and participate in lifting others up. That's standingwithhope.com. I'm Gracie, and I am Standing with Hope.
He will be strong to deliver me safe, and the joy of the Lord is my strength.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a family caregiver. Does the joy of the Lord serve as your strength? And it does for my wife indeed. And that is Gracie with Rush Taff. And I just love that. I just love listening to her sing. I did something that brought joy. We're talking about things that you can do, Christmas gifts for yourself.
Yeah.
To build up your heart and to strengthen you and all these kinds of things. And John is going through the list we have here. Commit to doing something that brings joy to your heart. I did something on Thanksgiving Day because we didn't travel, so we had a little bit more of the open day. We had Thanksgiving our meal at dinner time, so I had the afternoon, and I lay down and let my leg get propped up a little bit, and I listened to almost all of Handel's Messiah. And we have Alexa.
Yeah.
So I just tell Alexa, just play the whole thing. And there was a couple of the arias I skipped because just for time, yeah. But there's a lot of, yeah. it's a 3.5 hour ordeal. I've sung Handel's Messiah, those choral pieces. I have, sung these things in every voice. Because I started off singing it when I was in grade school as a soprano.
Oh, yeah.
And as my voice changed, it went further. Just further down the
yeah, you just ratchet down the scale, you know.
The page. And, yeah, yeah. And so I was, I would say, I eventually sang bass in it, but I knew all the parts. So when we get to these fabulous choruses, including the Hallelujah chorus, which is not the ending of the Messiah, by the way. A lot of people think that's the end. That's not.
Yeah.
The ending is Worthy is the Lamb. But when you get to the end, and one of my favorites, though, is And the glory of the Lord. But I also took conducting in music school. So I'm laying there, and I'm conducting this, and I'm seeing in my mind just the orchestra and the choir, and I'm pointing to all the parts doing it to come in. And there are just tears filling up my eyes with these things. It's such an exquisitely beautiful piece. He composed all that 24 days.
Really?
Handel did
I didn't
that in
know
24
that.
Days.
Yeah,
he
well,
did it
he,
24 days.
He was a,
that's,
you know.
Yeah. But he, but that brought joy to me. That just, I can't tell you what it did for me personally, just to lift my soul. And Martin Luther used to say, there's nothing like second to the word of God, music lifts the soul.
It is a complete shortcut to all parts of our psyche. This is not a brag.
Write that down.
Yeah.
Write that down. That's brilliant.
I said that a lot. It's a complete shortcut. Oh, it's a cheat code or whatever you want to call it. But this is probably a dig on myself, but I don't often weep. I cry at weddings really bad. But in the middle of the day or something like that, it's just not, I'm not like that. And that's okay. It's not a big deal. But if you, get me on a particular night and there are a couple of songs that reach into me and just,
I know one of everything. Them.
Oh, which one?
I know one. Hallelujah.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Leonard Cohen, he did a really good job. It's yes. five chords. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's the easiest chord progression ever. Oh man, but it is a lovely, lovely song. Also, the end of that Futurama episode with the dog. Right, I'm not gonna lie. to take a quick aside, but you know, but no, there's a couple of songs that really. They short circuit everything about us sometimes. And it might be because we heard them at a particular time or because they're just constructed in a way that is incredibly moving. But there is something about the human soul that responds to this in ways that are, they're unintentional. They're outside of our ability to control.
Yeah. We can't contain it. We can't contain it.
Yeah. It just comes right out.
For me, I like all kinds of music. I was a music major and I really don't remember a time when
music
was
better than being A flat minor.
That hurts me. That hurts. So I've learned to appreciate all kinds of things. But when I sat down and I just said, I want to hear the Messiah. And I thought back to all the choruses that I sang in with the orchestras and everything else. And there is nothing like doing this with a full orchestra and a full choir. I did not know this. I did a little research on it. Did not know this about the Messiah, but it was really written for a smaller group, 20 singers and a small ensemble with a harpsichord and a couple of violins, you know, like a chamber thing.
Wasn't
supposed to have it, but as it grew in popularity, people thought it needed to be bigger. Make it bigger. Make it bigger. Guess who reorchestrated a lot of this to make it bigger?
Oh, was it Beethoven?
Mozart.
Oh, okay.
Mozart did that. And then...
Yeah, go ahead.
It swelled to the point, it got to one point where they had 600 plus choir members singing it. And then they realized we've gone too far.
What venue? There was no room for the audience.
it's just nuts. And so, I was listening to at the University of Oxford University over London, I guess, or wherever it is, Cambridge, wherever. Yeah. I don't know where it is. But it's over there somewhere in England. But they were doing it and they had scaled it down, but it was exquisite. And it immediately took me back to all those choirs. The first time I heard this piece when I was singing this and because I've sung all four parts of this, I knew where all the parts came in.
Right.
And that was really, I don't know. I just sat there and I could just picture the choir. I could picture the orchestra and I knew when the trumpets were supposed to come in. I knew when the timpani came in. I knew when the altos would come in and I was conducting it in my mind and time flew out the window.
And this
so it brought joy to me as a caregiver.
Right. And that's the reason we're talking about all this, by the way. A couple of pieces that if I want to mention before we get into this, I wake up every day to Moonlight Sonata, all three movements. It's a really good wake up because it starts very chill and then builds for a little bit and you end up with some craziness. But also Rhapsody in Blue. Rhapsody in Blue. Oh yeah. And I know every note to that. Like because we played it and just like all of the mess. Like I know when, you know, that Leonard Bernstein version is just, I know every piece of it. And this is something that brings me joy. And that's what we're really talking about to give yourself a gift as a caregiver. It's really important to, it can be an experience, it can be a little bit of time, it can be, you know, doing a piece of art for yourself, it can be gardening, it can be, look, Hank Hill once said, I don't know why anybody does drugs when they can just cut grass.
Well, and that is our, we leave you with this at the end of the show. That is our challenge to you as caregivers. Find something this Christmas season and beyond that brings you joy. What brings you joy? What lifts your heart? It doesn't have to be an oratorio like the Messiah. It could be just listen to Crazy Train but never mind. But find something that brings you joy. This is Hope for the Caregiver. We'll see you next week. HopeForTheCaregiver.com.